It's a great pleasure to have another opportunity to speak with Mark Rubinstein, author of the terrific Net Interest weekly newsletter on financial sector themes. Mark, today we will talk about your recent article, Money Without Borders: A Peek Inside Wise. Lots of great insights into the money transfer business, as well as a company that looks to be a public company quite soon here in 2021.
Yeah, that's right, John. So Wise, formerly known as TransferWise, is seeking a direct listing on the London Stock Exchange, which is unusual. There are some precedents for direct listings in London, but they're not that common. And it's an innovation that, for example, Spotify, another European company, has direct listing in the US. But this will be quite a significant addition to the London market when it lists in July.
And you tell essentially the entire story of the company, which is a really interesting story, especially kind of the founding story as well, and then how the company has scaled and how the business model has evolved in order to allow for that scaling process. But why don't we start back with in 2010 when this company was actually started?
So it started in 2010, as you said. A number of fintechs were launched in London in that period, not just in London, in fact, but throughout the world. The aftermath of the financial crisis, there was a lot of disdain for banks and financial institutions, and fintechs exploited that by establishing businesses that, and this is kind of what I call fintech 1.0, either had better user interface, better user experience than traditional incumbent banks, or in TransferWise's case, they picked off at a specific area of banking that was by itself very expensive. And the specific area they went after was foreign exchange, money transfers. And the founding story, every good startup has to have one, is interesting. Two founders, both originally from Estonia, were working in London. One of them was the director of strategy for Skype, actually one of Skype's earliest employees. And his friend worked at Deloitte. The one who worked at Skype, he was paid in the time, this is before Estonia's entry into the Eurozone, he was paid in the Estonian currency, kroon. And his friend was paid in pounds, but his friend actually had mortgage payments to make back home in Estonia. So one of them wanted kroon, but had pounds. The other one wanted pounds, but had kroon. Banks were prepared to do the trade for them for a 7% fee. And the friends decided, why don't they just cut out the bank and interface directly with each other in a really simple peer-to-peer process? The trust was there because they were friends, and that's what they did. They soon recognized that the demand permeated beyond just the two of them. They set up a very simple matching system on Skype for their Estonian friends, and then recognized that actually there was a market here. And in 2010, and then going into 2011, they launched TransferWise as a peer-to-peer foreign exchange matching platform.
And they did some volume in the first year, I guess as much as 10 million pounds. But how did they actually then go about finding customers and scaling this business?
Yeah, it's a really important question because any consumer startup business has to overcome the challenge of winning consumer customers. They did it by advertising very aggressively. They raised venture capital funding, small seed round in 2012, and they raised pretty much every year subsequent to that, all the way through to 2017. Andreessen Horowitz didn't participate in the seed round, but came in 2015, $58 million round in 2015, by which time TransferWise had raised close to £100 million of funding. Much of which was spent in advertising. So very, very aggressive marketing campaign on the London Underground. They pulled stunts whereby TransferWise employees would parade semi-naked in front of landmarks in both London and then in New York, basically presenting the declaration that, unlike banks, they've got nothing to hide. It was pretty anti-bank focused. It was aggressive, but it got them on the map and they won customers. By 2015, when Andreessen Horowitz invested, they'd done, so cumulatively from the beginning of 2011 when they launched through to the beginning of 2015, £3 billion worth of foreign exchange volumes.
And as they've grown, they had to adjust the model somewhat because they couldn't scale just as a peer-to-peer platform.
Yes, that's right. That's right. So they, in order, it's kind of the chicken and egg in any marketplace model around supply and demand. And it's something we've spoken about before. There are instances where it fails. For example, in the case of Greensill, where there was a mismatch between the demand for supply chain finance and the supply of funding against it. And it's an issue in any kind of peer-to-peer model. In order to grow and scale, they flipped and they decided to take on foreign exchange risk onto their own balance sheet. That's what they began to do. In 2016, there was a Bloomberg interview in which the founder said that by 2016, only 60% of matches were true peer-to-peer matches. And today, they do run foreign exchange inventory on their balance sheet. So they take risk. It's important to recognize that. Many foreign exchange brokers, intermediaries, have failed in the past in the light of extreme fluctuations in currencies. In March of 2020, when COVID broke out, the TransferWise prospectus discloses that there were some losses incurred in that period when currencies behaved very erratically. But they do take the risk. They take it in two ways. One, they run inventory on their balance sheet, but also they promise customers a price before the customer necessarily funds the trade. And so they are open to risk for the several minutes and longer, actually, in the case of weekends, which requires them to take on additional risk. So today, it's no longer a peer-to-peer matching platform. It is a foreign exchange intermediary, no different from other foreign exchange brokers.
And while they started, I guess, charging £1 per transaction, that has gone up and is a percentage of the amount, but they have spoken about wanting to share their scale efficiencies with their customers.
Well, this is where it gets really interesting. So many listeners will be familiar with the concept of scale efficiencies shared. The term was coined by Nick Sleep many, many years ago. He subsequently said, and there's a great chapter on him in William Green's book, which was out quite recently. He talks about scale efficiency shared as being, and he kind of identified it initially through Costco, the strategy whereby companies through scale are able to reduce costs and therefore share the benefits of that scale with their customers. He calls it a paradox, Nick Sleep, because he says normally it's a paradox because normally Wall Street would be, look, hang on, you've got the benefits of scale and you're giving them back to customers. But it was identified in his case through observation of Costco, but it was Amazon that kind of made it famous. And in 2005, his letter to shareholders, Jeff Bezos writes, he writes, "Our judgment is that relentlessly returning efficiency improvements and scale economies to customers in the form of lower prices creates a virtuous cycle that leads over the long term to a much larger dollar amount of free cash flow." There aren't that many businesses that employ it. Nixley has identified several, of which he is and has been a shareholder of. I've never seen it in financial services. TransferWise has a goal to eventually reduce its fees to zero. Now, whether it actually gets there or not is maybe less the point than the ambition is to drive down costs. And they say, and I'll quote from their prospectus, they say, "We believe customers should get what they pay for. And so we aim not to cross subsidize between customers' products or routes. We calculate exactly the costs involved in offering our various products and services, and we charge the customer that amount plus a small margin." Actually, in their fiscal year 2019, they had to put prices up. They did a migration over to AWS. There were some costs associated with that. Unit costs increased. They passed that on to customers. But normally the trend through scale is for costs to decline, unit costs to decline, and they pass those on to customers as well, which they did last year in their fiscal year 2021. As I say, very, very interesting. Never seen it before in financial services. And it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
And it's certainly a vast market opportunity, two-thirds of which is still dominated by banks. So it sounds like with that strategy, they could actually have a very long growth runway.
Yeah, that's right. And I think the fundamental difference with the kind of Costco Amazon model is that consumers have a higher, they have a higher dollar amount that they might be prepared to spend. Their consumption, their overall consumption, given that Amazon ultimately is striving to win a bigger share of every individual's overall consumption, that pool, that consumption pool is probably greater than a consumer's foreign exchange needs. There's a certain limit to how much foreign exchange any consumer wants. Now, the demographic of TransferWise overlaps inevitably very well with high propensity to do foreign exchange. So people who are living in one country, who are nationals in another country, like the two founders, given the origin story we discussed, people who travel a lot, and increasingly they're going after the business market as well. But the fact remains that there's a limit to how much any consumer wants to transact cross-border in any given year. And actually, their volumes per consumers have flatlined at about £7,400 over the past few years. One would expect Amazon spend would have gone up over that period. And therefore, the analogy with the scale efficiencies shared breaks down a little bit. But, and this comes back to your question, there is scope to win more of the overall pie. So right now they have 2.5% market share. 66% is still with the banks. And to the extent that they can offer a better product, not only cheaper, it's faster, more transparent, they can, as long as they can win customers cheaply, they can attempt to extract more customers, if not more spend per customer.
And even though the money transfer market is so vast at $2 trillion, They have rebranded from TransferWise to JustWise as they want to go even broader in terms of their service offering.
Yes, that's right. And that really could be the way to reconcile this idea about the fees being free. So right now, 90% of their revenue is currency transfer, foreign exchange. If they want to get the fees there down to zero, then the other 10% needs to pick up the slack and grow. That other 10% is kind of banking related. They issued a account where the market is again maybe more affluent. People who travel a lot have got links with foreign countries. They launched this account in 2018. They've got 1.6 million account holders now. It's a kind of initially they use the term borderless, they dropped that, but it's a borderless account. It's a multi-currency account in which people who have liabilities or assets in multiple currencies can manage those out of a single account. They launched this, as I say, 1.6 million customers right now. It generates revenue through debit interchange, other sources of revenue as well, domestic transfers and the like. But it's a kind of a natural extension. We've spoken before about kind of fintech models broadly and the super app and the convergence of these consumer fintechs towards an all singing, all dancing supermarket of financial services. TransferWise doesn't necessarily right now want to do that. So, for example, they're not offering crypto, they don't want to offer loans. But there's more things they can do. So, with the account, and they've got an average of £2,300 per account holder sitting in these accounts, they can offer more like investment products, for example. So, there are ancillary revenue sources they can tap into and are tapping into, and that's what they're doing, and they're doing it globally.
At the moment, they're not regulated as a bank. Do you have a view on whether they will need to be regulated as a bank in order to offer more and more services?
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. So technically, right now, they, unless they want to offer credit, they don't. But there is a big regulatory arbitrage out there that not only them, but other wallet providers are participating in. PayPal being another example. PayPal has something like over $35 billion of customer funds sitting on their balance sheet. Wise, as I say, has £2,300 per customer. 1.6 million customers is about £3.7 billion on their balance sheet. These entities don't have to be regulated as banks. Now they do have to maintain some capital, but that's less than an equivalent bank. They are constrained in what they do with those deposits. Clearly, they can't take customer deposits and go and invest them in junk bonds. They're constrained to what they can do with them. But there is some risk, and it's a risk we're seeing, for example, in stable coins right now, which is the same model, i.e., take customer funds in on the liability side of your balance sheet and promise that you'll look after them on the asset side, but you might not. They are regulated in that sense, but it is a regulatory arbitrage. Those standards under which they are subject are looser than those that would be employed if they were a bank. So it's something I think regulators will look at. The market, as usual, is evolving much more quickly than regulators are able to keep up. And whether it's Wise or PayPal or any of these wallet models, it is something that I think is being looked at.
Mark, how much do we know with regard to the direct listing, either in terms of timing or the expected valuation?
Just what we read in the press, they're talking about beginning of July. They're talking about maybe $6 to $7 billion valuation, but no more than that. We'll find out in due course.
Terrific. Well, thank you so much, Mark, for the conversation. It's a pleasure as always.
Thanks, John. Thank you.